Welcome to Just a Minute. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our four exciting personalities who this week are going to play Just a Minute. We have two of our long-standing players of the game, that is Peter Jones and Clement Freud, and we also have two of our more recent regular players of the game, Paul Merton and Kit Hesketh Harvey. Would you please welcome all four of them? Beside me sits Elaine Wigley, who is going to keep the score and blow a whistle when 60 seconds are up. And this particular recording of Just a Minute is coming from the new radio theatre, which is in the bowels of Broadcasting House. I'm going, as usual, ask our four players to speak, if they can, on the subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. Let us begin the show this week with Clement Freud, and the subject, Clement, is charisma. Well, this show, there's been plenty of charisma shown throughout every series. But talk on it if you can, Clement, starting now.
Charisma is a sort of journeyman halo when it's vested in people who are not saints. P.T. Barnum was extraordinarily charismatic. He was once told that the man who was fired from the cannon in his circus was dead, and said, "That is sad, it will be hard to find a man of the same caliber." Tommy Docherty, the football manager, I think has charisma like few other people. He is the inventor of the phrase, "Do unto others and run like hell." Also, a friend in need is a pain in the arse. But Nicholas Parsons, if you look at him carefully, you will notice a sort of void where charisma comes up. All the other elements are there, his blazer, his tie, hair, which seems to have gone more profuse over the months.
And Peter Jones is challenged.
He's not really talking about charisma, he's talking about lack of charisma.
Yes, it's a correct challenge, Peter, but... Unfortunately, you've emphasised the fact that he was applying it to me, and so... But as it's a correct challenge, you have a point for that, and you take over the subject. But Clement did keep going for 58 seconds, which is quite an achievement. So, Peter, 2 seconds on charisma, starting now.
If you haven't got it, you'll never get it.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Peter Jones, so he's naturally in the lead at the end of that round. Paul Merton, will you take the next round? What a carry-on. An expression, a phrase, but a subject on which we'd like you to talk, starting now.
When Uncle George built a spaceship in his back garden, all the neighbours said, "What a carry-on. The man's insane. He attempts to get to the moon in nothing more than a giant milk bottle with a firework shoved into the top. He's strapped an armchair to the side of it. He's going to light the blue touch paper and not retire, but instead shoot up into the stars." So the police were called and they said, "Well, it's not a matter for us, really. This man is seriously ill in a psychiatric way." They didn't quite phrase it like that. They said, "He's balmy, get the doctor." So the medical man arrived and he examined the gentleman.
Clement Freud challenged.
There seemed to be a hesitation.
There was a definite So Clement.
Oh, what rubbish.
You did actually say
Which possibly.
Is, yeah.
But I didn't hesitate when I said it.
No, you didn't hesitate when you said it. Which is a new subtle way of playing Just a Minute. In other words, you kept speaking, but you did say and as is not in the Oxford English Dictionary, we interpret that as hesitation. Clement challenge. He has a point. He takes the subject. And there are 22 seconds left. What a carry-on, Clement, starting now.
In the theatre, a walk-on who is unable to perambulate onto the stage and is brought...
Paul Merton challenge.
Well, I know I was going to say for repetition, but it was on, and it's what a carry-on. So
and what a carry-on. Yes, you can repeat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Clement, incorrect challenge. You get a point for that. You keep the subject 14 seconds. What a carry-on, starting now.
Is known by some members of the audience as a carry-on by virtue of the fact that he or she is unable to fly, use a trapeze, or be brought in any other manner or custom towards the scenario.
When the whistle was blown then by Lane, it told us that 60 seconds was up, and Clement Freud was speaking on that occasion, so he gained that extra point for doing so, and he's now taken the lead. Let us move to Peter Jones to begin. Peter, the subject is smut. Little of it in just a minute, I'm sure, but that's the subject to talk about or talk on starting now.
It's a lovely word, isn't it? And it really describes a sort of cleaned-up version of filth. And I think it's a poor substitute, really. I remember my first encounter with it was a postcard which I saw in a newsagent's window, which depicted a vicar addressing his audience at a village concert, and he was saying, "And Miss Stingo will now sing when I am in my little bed accompanied by the curate." And the curate was in the background.
Paul Merton challenge.
Sadly, repetition of curates.
Yes, oh, you yes. had too many curates in that bed, I'm
yes.
afraid.
Well, you've got the gist of it anyway.
Yes. Yes. You were making it more smutty than it really was.
I was only nine.
Yeah. But you still recognise the smut. Paul Merton, you have 27 seconds smut. Starting now.
The smuttiest thing I've seen in the last 30 years is Nicholas Parsons in the Rocky Horror Show. It is a performance riddled with filth. He walks onto the stage and, by his own confession, roundly abuses the audience for turning up in the first place, and then performs a rather disgusting exotic cabaret with various selected vegetables. The finale of his act, if you can call it such a thing, is where he inserts a marrow...
That is what we call being saved by the whistle, actually. We won't take it any further, except to say that Paul Merton was speaking when the whistle went, gained an extra point for doing so, and he's now in second place, just behind Clement Freud. And Kit Hesketh-Harvey, your turn to begin. Spin doctors. Can you talk about them starting now?
Well, there are many definitions, perhaps, of the term spin doctors. One thinks of the whirling dervishes of the Mohammedans who vowed poverty and chastity and in that climate simply had to spin to make any fun out of life. There are the NHS junior doctors who were whipped by Mrs. Bottomley or her successor into a fantastic, towering frenzy of performance, 256 hours a week, some of them, unable, oh, Lord, heavens.
Clement Freud. Yes, I recognised it.
He
I
was
think we
spun.
All did. 34 seconds. Spin doctors, starting now.
I think the spin doctor that most of us have closest to our hearts is W.G. Grace, who played cricket for 50 years of the 80 that he lived, who captained the gentlemen of England at Lord's when he was well into past middle age, and who took 2,800 first-class wickets, mostly at the cricket ground that Mr. Lord had in St. John's Wood, but also...
Peter Jones is challenged.
Your repetition.
No, it was too many wickets.
Oh, too
it?
Many wickets, was it?
Yes. Well, that's
I thought he repeated Lord.
W.G. Grace was noted for his batting, not for his spin bowling.
Was he?
Yes.
He took... he took 2,000...
Well, God knows you were there. You should know.
Clement, there with you. You have an incorrect challenge, so you keep... I'm at a point, keep the subject. 6 seconds. Spin doctors starting now.
Leg breaks, off gotters, but especially the ball that went with the arm.
Clement Freud, speaking as the whistle went, has increased his lead at the end of the round, and it has come round for him to speak. And the subject you're taking now is bubble and squeak. Can you talk on bubble and squeak? In fact, I think you should tell us how we make the best bubble and squeak. 60 seconds, starting now.
Bubble.
Paul Merton.
Hesitation.
Don't encourage him, for goodness sake. If we were to challenge as rapidly as that all the time, Paul, actually it was only 2/3 of a second, so I don't think I could allow it. Clement has another point. Bubble and squeak, Clement, starting now.
Bubble and squeak is a sort of...
That's what often happens.
That was longer than 2/3 of a second.
But Kit Hesketh-Harvey pressed his mouth the first, I'm afraid. Kit, bubble and squeak with you, starting now.
Of course, it's absolutely delicious and terribly unfashionable nowadays because of its high cholesterol content, but for about 2/3 of a second...
Paul Merton-Junk.
Cholesterol?
It's a slight deviation from the word as we understand it. So... Paul, you've gone incorrectly there. 50 seconds on Bubble and Squeak, starting now.
Billy Bubble and Sammy Squeak were one of the most popular double acts in the 1930s. Between them, they took over 2,800 wickets, and that was while they were playing the Chiswick Empire. They were a fantastic combination, and people used to rush to the theatre every night to see what Bubble and Squeak were up to in their crazy antics. In many ways, they were a kind of version of Kit and the Widow, except 50 years before...
Permafroid challenge.
Two kits.
Kit and the Widow and the Kit. You repeated the word kit. Well, I heard it, didn't you?
Wickets before, but not kit.
Wicket.
You do two kits. Yes, there's one person in the audience kit. Heard it, yes. Yes, we have to be very sharp here.
So one person in the audience has heard it out of 400. And we don't know who that person
other
is. They might be mentally unbalanced.
The other 400, you've completely conned over to you as your fans and followings. You've usurped them.
Usurped anybody in my life. How dare you?
No, you did actually repeat the word kit. And Clement Freud heard
it. You're making it up.
When you listen to this show, when it's...
I will, don't worry about that. And so will my lawyer.
I certainly didn't hear it, though I must admit I wasn't listening very hard.
Now, look, this punch-up is a free-for-all. If anybody else wants to join in, they can. I'm going to stand by what I heard, and Clement, you have a correct challenge. 27 seconds, Bubble and Squeak starting now.
Bubble and Squeak is a mixture of cabbage and potato. And the former of these can be Savoy or any other kind. The latter, King Edward's, White's, Mary's Piper. It is unimportant. The crucial thing...
Kit Hesketh-Harvey.
More than 2/3 of a second, I'm afraid.
Yes, yes, it was. It was a hesitation. 12 seconds for you, Kit, on Bubble and Squeak, starting now.
I once had two hamsters called Bubble and Squeak. They were absolutely enchanting and lived entirely on Mary's Piper and Desiree. But what they missed...
Hesitation.
Yes, Peter. Bubble and Squeak's with you now, and you have 4 seconds starting now.
I must say, I think it's a disgrace that this subject should be given to one of the world famous...
Peter Jones, speaking as the whistle Wayne, gained that extra point. He's equal in second place with Paul Merton. Clement Freud is still in the lead. Kit Hesketh-Harvey is only 1 point behind those in second place. Paul, your turn to begin. The subject, Martians. Will you tell us something about them in just a minute, starting now?
In 1938, Orson Welles produced a radio adaptation of the H.G. Wells story, The War of the Worlds. And by a simple device of pretending that this dramatisation was in fact a real news programme, he managed to persuade millions of Americans into thinking that the Martians had landed in New Jersey. And there was all kinds of terrible panic going on, and apparently, according to the papers next day, several people attempted to commit suicide, and one woman spread herself naked on the hill and said, "I'm ready, take me now." But apparently she did this every Friday. Don't tell me, repetition of Kit.
Kit Hesketh-Harvey, what was your challenge? What?
Two apparentlys. I think there were
two. There were two apparentlys, I'm afraid, yes. 23 seconds on Martians with you, Kit Hesketh-Harvey, starting now.
Broadly speaking, I suppose Martians are people who come from Mars. I think of Marianne Faithfull at times like this and think what a...
Clement Freud challenge.
Two thinks.
You were thinking too much, I'm afraid. Which is useful in this game, but not to repeat the word. 16 seconds, Clement. Martians, starting now.
It is an alternative plural of the Christian name Marcia, as in Faulkender. You could say I was walking down the street with several Martians.
That would be done on the sea, surely, wouldn't it?
Only if you have a beach.
Sorry, Aaron Bishop.
It was a good try, but I think I'll give the benefit of the doubt to Clement and tell him he has 5 seconds on Martian starting now.
If you come from Mars, you are...
Peter Jones challenge.
Hesitation.
Indeed, Peter, and you got in a game with only 1 second to go on the subject. On Martian starting now.
If they come here, don't let them in.
So Peter Jones has moved into second place ahead of the other two, and Clement Freud's still in the lead. And Peter, it's your turn to begin. The subject is revelations. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute?
Well, it's revelations are usually associated with exposures of some kind. And every hero that we ever had when we were children has been exposed in one way or another. And I'm waiting for Mother Teresa, for instance, to be named as the lover of some...
Paul Merton challenge.
Hesitation.
Hesitation,
well,
yes.
It was reasonable to hesitate over such a delicate subject.
Especially with Mother Teresa in mind.
Exactly.
So, Paul, you've got him with 40 seconds on revelation, starting now.
I had a most extraordinary revelation the other day when I heard that Peter Jones in the 1940s worked in a Hungarian circus under the name of Betty Allsop. And he worked as a knife thrower's assistant. Every night, as Queen
Carver.
I'm afraid he hesitated. I was longing to know what was going on.
I know.
Yeah, so was I.
It didn't come out there. Right, 25 seconds. Revelations from you, Kit, starting now.
Of course, in theological terminology, the revelations are of St. John the Divine, the last book of the New Testament, and he is no relation to Hugh Grant's friend, of course, who works on Sunset Boulevard, nor...
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition of course.
What a pity, because I think he was getting quite interesting. 14 seconds on Revelations with you, Clement, starting now.
Revelations is not only the last book of the Bible, but also the name of rather a good lot of suitcases.
Paul Merton challenge.
Repetition of also.
Yes, it's a tough challenge, but it's correct. So, 7 seconds on Revelations with you, Paul, starting now.
Well, my one revelation that I wish to produce here tonight...
Kit Hesketh.
The subject's Revelations rather than Revelation.
Yep.
Yes.
And if there's only one...
Well, it doesn't matter. He hasn't got going. He can say, well, he's talking about revelations. He can start off by saying, my one revelation.
And then two revelations,
yeah.
And so on.
Yeah. Up to 33 and a third revelations a minute.
No, I think he was perfectly correct. You've got to establish what you're going to talk about, and he was talking about his one revelation, which is within the subject. 3 seconds with you, Paul, starting now.
Is this, many years ago, I...
So Clement Freud is still in the lead. Paul Merton is now in second place, then Kit Hesketh-Harvey, then Peter Jones. Only 1 point separates them all. And Kit Hesketh-Harvey, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is alchemy. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
It was the Elizabethan sage John Dee who was the aegis of his age. I think he was an astronomer, a necromancer. He travelled in the Far East and brought back delicate instruments with which he could measure the routes to the Far East and the Virgin Queen for such he was.
Peter Jones challenge.
A repetition of the Far East.
You had too many Far Easts.
Oh, Lord, I was getting so keen on the Virgin Queen.
Peter, 44 seconds on alchemy, starting now.
Well, it was just these crazy people who thought they could turn lead into gold and make a great deal of money. And they never succeeded, as anybody with any sense would have known they couldn't. And that's about all I know about it, really.
And you came to a full stop.
Yes.
So that's hesitation.
And they should have done the same.
Kit Hesketh-Harvey, 29 seconds on alchemy, starting now.
Its point is that the law of supply and demand. If everything is made of gold, then nothing is worth anything, really, is it? Or the Ionian fallacy. However, it became the subject of a play by Ben Jonson at the beginning of the next century, in which the eponymous...
Paul Merton challenge.
Ah, yes. Now, I think I know what you mean when you said the beginning of the next century. You meant from the... passage of time you'd meant before.
That was generally what
I implied. Yeah, but I'd heard next century, so it sounded like this play had yet to be written. But then I realised that he had been talking... are you with me?
I don't think anybody's with you, actually.
Repetition.
I think you've gone on one of your flights of fantasy in explaining what your challenge was.
You can say that to me, wearing that jacket.
No.
It looks like a barcode. There, I saved it for the show.
I know. You've got to laugh the first time and a round of applause the second. Kids, I disagree with the challenge.
Well, it wasn't a challenge. It was nonsense. We all know that.
So you still have alchemy and you have 17 seconds to continue, starting now.
In which Sir Epicure Mammon, I believe his name is, duped by an alchemist into believing that he can reach the Philosopher's Stone. Tribulation wholesome.
Clement Freud challenged.
Did I?
Yes.
It was not a valid challenge.
No.
Shall we put it to the audience? No.
I know what the result would be, that Kit has another point in 8 seconds on alchemy, starting now.
In trying to seduce his lovely daughter, Dame Pliant, who is being beaten from pillar to post by these wicked, terrible men.
Well, that is the first time in this show that anybody started with the subject and, in spite of interruptions, still had it when the whistle went. Oh. Kit Hesketh-Harvey, you had a point for speaking when the whistle went, a number of points in the round, and you are now only 1 point behind our leader, who is still Clement Freud. And Clement, it is your turn to begin, and the subject is skullduggery.
Rigor mortis?
It was probably a bit of rigor mortis on my part, because I forgot to say starting now. So I've recovered, because I'm just about to have a little drink of water to clear my throat. But Clement Freud, it's skullduggery starting now.
Skullduggery is the past participle of skulldiggery. If you were to go into a country churchyard late one night with a spade or a shovel and disturb the earth in order to see what is inside the graves, and you came across the skull of someone, that would be skullduggery. If you did it last week, it would be skulldiggery. I do hope I make myself clear on this. It's also a word given to doing things nastily in an underhand manner, possibly illegally, or even in such a way as the justice of the peace might call the matter to his attention and send you before the courts of law in order to serve some time at the public taxpayers' expense, which seems to do very little good to the actual felons who commit such crimes. Skullduggery, it's a word which...
Oh! He was challenged as the whistle went, but we don't allow that because he went so magnificently for 60 seconds. So on that occasion, we not only give him a point for speaking as the whistle went, but he gains a bonus point for not being interrupted. Well done, Clement, and your applause showed how much they appreciated it. And you've increased your lead at the end of the round, and it is Paul Merton's turn to begin. The subject is playing the goat. 60 seconds. Stop. I don't know why they laugh at you, Paul. I don't know what image you've established in this audience's mind, but would you talk on the subject starting now?
First, you must tune your goat adequately. You must blow into its ear, and with a bit of luck, a noise will emerge from its mouth. After a little bit of fingering that you have to do down the middle of its back, it's possible to play such marvellous melodies as Lullaby of Broadway, It's a Long Way to Tipperary, and A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. There is an orchestra in Munich which consists entirely of Germans playing goats. They specialise in the works of Beethoven, the Eroica Symphony No. 3, for those who are aware of that great master's work. It's a particularly strong item, and the locals come to hear the billy goats' marvellous interpretation of these chromatic scales building up to a crescendo at the end of the third movement, where flannels have to come onto the stage to wipe the goats down.
A resounding round of applause. Well done, Paul.
It's a true story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the audience realised that, and that's why they were laughing so much. Peter Jones, it's your turn to begin. The subject is liberty. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
Well, it's a very nice shop in Regent Street. And I often enjoy going there. They have excellent sales, which go on for about 11 and a half months out of the 12. And they don't have very good bargains, but they do have interesting materials from different parts of the world, particularly in the basement. And I've bought one or two things from there, two chairs, one or two vases.
Paul Merton Challenge.
Repetition of two.
Yes, you want a two, one or two.
Two, yes.
Yes. 35 seconds are available for you on liberty, Paul, starting now.
What a wonderful country we live in. We have liberty. We can come to the radio theatre and listen to Just a Minute. We can point at the Prime Minister in the street and shout out, "You're useless," and nobody can arrest us for this. This is perfectly normal behaviour in this great British country of ours. I don't know why I particularly call it that, but of course it is more or less the United Kingdom. And if
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition of country.
Yes. 14 seconds. Liberty with you, Clement, starting now.
The Statue of Liberty, depicting a woman with a left arm raised and a funny sort of haircut, is standing in New York, and should you arrive by boat, may be the very first thing you see.
So, Clement Freud was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He has increased his lead. He's 3 points ahead of Paul Merton in second place, 4 ahead of Kit Hesketh-Harvey, and 5 ahead of Peter Jones, and we're moving into the last round. It could, by a flash in the pan, be anybody's, but let's see what happens as we start the next round with Kit Hesketh-Harvey. Expostulate. That is the subject on the card. Can you expostulate on that subject, starting now?
It's not a subject one likes to do very much in front of a paying audience, or even a non-paying such.
Yes.
It's non-paying hyphenated, I didn't know.
I think we take the word paying. So, Paul, I agree with the challenge. 54 seconds, expostulate, starting now.
My next-door neighbour was well known to the police all over Britain for expostulating late at night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, when the rest of us were trying to get to sleep. And there would be this unholy smell coming from the inside of his house and the sound of goats being tuned up for some god-awful satanic version of Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries. It was a nightmare to be living next to this man. So one day I popped round to his abode. I knocked firmly on the door and I said, "Look, I speak for everybody in this street. We're sick to death of your expostulations, which are all over the pavement, and some of them blame the Labradors, but I know it's you." And he stood up to his full height and he expostulated right in my face, and I was covered from head to foot in this expostulation liquid that was...
Well, a fine example of expostulation, and kept him going until the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so, and in spite of all that energy expended, Paul Merton finished up in second place, just ahead of Kit Hesketh-Harvey and Peter Jones, but 2 points ahead of Paul was Clement Freud. So we say he is the winner this week. Congratulations. To me to thank our four talented players of the game, which is Clement Freud, Paul Merton, Peter Jones and Kit Hesketh-Harvey, also Elaine Wigley for keeping the score, and Ian Messiter, of course, who created the game and thought up the subjects, and our producer Anne Jobson for producing and directing the show. So from all of them and from me, Nicholas Parsons, this is goodbye. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be tuned in next time we take to the air to play Just a Minute. Thank you.